these first 2 years of life are absolutely critical to improve long-term outcomes. And those first 2 years of life are the time that interventions can have the greatest success at improving problems stemming from malnutrition.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Malnutrition in children is a silent killer because, well, by the time its effects become obvious, it's too late to do anything about it. We can combat it by giving better information to parents and mums-to-be, but even if they know what's best for their children, they might still be too poor to do much about it. An experiment in Nepal investigated how lack of knowledge and lack of income each contribute to the problem of malnutrition and which type of intervention might be most effective. Mike Levia of Haverford College was one of the researchers and he joins me now. Mike, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thanks so much for having me, Tim. It's very nice to speak with you.
It's great to have you on, Mike. Tell me, first of all, how serious is the problem of malnutrition in Nepal?
It's a very serious problem. Generally, throughout Southern Asia, we see that about one in three children are at risk of malnutrition, and Nepal is similar. The most recent data that we have nationally from 2016 indicate that roughly 36% of children under five are at risk of malnutrition. So very similar to those numbers for Southern Asia more broadly. And the way that's measured is by looking at children's height relative to universal norm. And that if their height is two standard deviations below the mean, that indicates that they're at risk of malnutrition.
That is millions of children, isn't it, when we add it all together? What's the impact for them long-term of malnutrition? What's the impact for the mums-to-be as well, I suppose, if they're malnourished?
There's been a lot of research on these long-term adverse effects. And I think first, right at the outset, as children, they're at greater risk of mortality just by nature of being malnourished. And then longer term, it can hurt children developmentally in terms of their physical and cognitive development. And that in turn can mean that as they grow up and become adults, they become less likely to be productive, less likely to be able to succeed in the labor market. And thus, overall, it can hurt total economic growth. So we can think of the child falling behind in school. If you start second grade and you didn't successfully complete first grade, you're going to have a hard time learning that second grade material and catching up. And that same type of analogy applies to malnutrition. And there's a long literature that shows that these first 2 years of life are absolutely critical to improve long-term outcomes. And those first 2 years of life are the time that interventions can have the greatest success at improving problems stemming from malnutrition. And some estimates from a recent USAID report suggest that as much as 2 to 3% of GDP in Nepal is lost because of vitamin and mineral deficiencies.
Historically, there have been efforts, haven't they, to educate families about the dangers of malnutrition. How successful have they been?
So there's actually been quite a bit of success to these efforts in the past extended period of time. So we've seen malnutrition go down fairly substantially. Right at the outset, I mentioned that in Nepal, about 36% of children were at risk of malnutrition in 2016. But as recently as 2001, this number was 57% of children. So there has been a pretty big decline. Mm-hmm. And we actually see a similar trend in Southern Asia more broadly. In 2000, about half of children were at risk of malnutrition. And that number has fallen to that one in three that I cited earlier in 2018. But having said that, there's been a lot of improvement, but there's still a long ways to go. We still see one in three children are at risk of malnutrition, and it's really important to ensure that all children start their lives with an equal opportunity to succeed, that we still put a further dent in those numbers.
Clearly, it's a hugely important problem. You ran a randomized controlled trial. What were the interventions that you tested here?
As you alluded to at the outset, we saw these two key barriers as a lack of information in terms of knowing about best practices and a lack of money. So we offered an information session and a cash transfer. And the information, we saw this as a key barrier because we see that in data, only about half of women initiate breastfeeding within 1 hour of birth, and that rates of exclusive breastfeeding have declined in Nepal in recent years. And these are best practices that are globally understood to promote child health. And another key fact that we see is that only about a third of children who are ages 6 to 23 months get what is considered to be a minimum acceptable diet. And that latter point, I think, can both speak to do women and do families know about what is the needed for an acceptable diet, but it can also speak to do they have the money to afford the food and the diversity in nutrition and diet to get to that minimum acceptable diet. And so we did this three-arm trial where we did one group got an information session only, one group got an information session and cash transfer, and then there was a third control group. And that information session was something that was part of a monthly meeting that led to discussing some essential nutrition actions. There were sort of seven essential nutrition actions. These included things like nutrition for pregnant women, providing appropriate iron supplementation, what are the best practices for breastfeeding, complementary feeding, and that sort of thing. And there's been a lot of research done on conditional cash transfers and unconditional cash transfers and, you know, showing their success throughout the developing world. There's a lot of these programs include an information component to try to educate mothers, women, and so forth. But I think there's been relatively less work done in terms of understanding the effects of information specifically. And we thought that that could be a potentially important channel.
I would imagine that Nepal's quite difficult to get around. So who's delivering this education?
Yeah, so one of the things that we did that I think is a great innovation here is we leveraged existing social infrastructure to deliver the intervention. So there were regular monthly meetings that communities had through what's known as Nepal's Poverty Alleviation Fund. And these regular meetings were designed to improve outcomes in these most poor, rural, marginalized communities through some types of community-driven development. And we worked with the people who ran those meetings, as well as local female community health volunteers, to ultimately deliver the intervention. So what we did is we trained these local health workers on the best practices, as well as then how to teach this information to the local women. And this was through like a train the trainer model. And as part of these monthly meetings that were ongoing, we at the end added a component where for women who are pregnant or women of children who were under 2 years old, we did this information session. And I think it's really important that we use this existing social infrastructure and people who the women had trusting relationships with, because you could imagine if a technocrat comes into a community and says, hey, like, here's what you should be doing with your children. People may not be that responsive to that. But if that message is coming from someone who is known and trusted and who they already have an existing relationship with, that may ultimately lead them to internalize and learn the information as well as to act on it.
It sounds like a great idea, Mike. How much did the women in each of these treatment groups, the education only and the education and cash transfer, how much did they learn?
The mothers learned a lot. We, in part of our survey, we asked 10 questions related to things on child and maternal nutrition and health. So these are things like, how long should you exclusively breastfeed? Do women need to eat more, less, or the same amount while they're pregnant? And in the control group, mothers got about 5 of these questions right. Women that got the information and cash got an entire additional question right on average. And what was great is that we also saw that up to 2 years later, they maintained this level of knowledge too. So that knowledge was internalized and they continued to understand it. Well, it didn't just disappear. And in the information-only group, women also improved their knowledge, and that improvement was persistent too, but the gain was actually a bit smaller. On average, women only got about half an additional question right. And it's a little bit surprising that women who got this cash also had greater knowledge, because we don't necessarily think that money leads to improved knowledge. But one of the key elements of this cash transfer that we gave is that it was conditional on attending the meeting. So in some sense, the cash may have served as an incentive to attend and thus may have led to this differential improvement in knowledge.
It's one thing, though, Mike, to improve your knowledge, but do we have evidence that these mothers acted differently afterwards?
We do have some evidence of that. In the information and cash group, women definitely made changes. So we saw that children of these women consumed on average an additional 100 calories more per day than children who were in the control group. We are also able to look at what are the behaviors that women take with subsequent children. And this is in terms of things like breastfeeding and mm-hmm. vitamin A take up and attending prenatal visits. And we see that looking across a broad index of these behaviors, women in the information and cash group improved by about 0.1 standard deviations. And that was also significant relative to the information only group. And this is important because these are things that we know should ultimately improve child health outcomes per the kind of World Health Organization standards of best practices. Interestingly, though, that information that we saw the improved knowledge for people in the information only group, we didn't find effects that it persisted in their behavior. Longer term, we did find a little bit of evidence of improvements in the information plus cash group, but it wasn't significant and it wasn't significantly different from the information only group.
And have you been able to measure outcomes? Are the kids better off?
We are able to look at that, and we look at children's physical health as well as their development, and we actually don't really see improvements on average. There is some suggestive evidence, so we see that children in this information plus cash group actually did have slightly better development outcomes than children in the information only group. And another interesting thing that we find is that the older siblings of children in this information plus cash groups who were aged 25 to 36 months, they actually had slightly better health in terms of their height and weight than the older siblings in the information only group. But these findings are a little more imprecise, and there's not as strong of a consistent pattern as what we saw in terms of knowledge and in terms of behavior.
About how big are these differences in outcomes?
The differences are roughly in the realm of, like, you know, 0.1 standard deviation as well. So for the siblings, it was about 0.1 standard deviations higher than the siblings in the information only group. For the children who at the time when this intervention began were younger than two, it was about a 0.07 standard deviation difference in child development.
You have some encouraging results here, but also I guess it serves as a warning that information itself might always be enough. Does this result make you optimistic? Are there things that worry you about it?
I think you raised a good point there, that it is a little bit of a mixed bag. It is important that I think one big encouraging element is that we see that we're able to improve knowledge and behavior in a fairly short time frame. These information sessions went on for a period of only 9 months, and the cash transfer actually only was distributed for a period of 5 months. So it's fairly short period of time. And so obviously that's the exciting thing, is that we are able to make a quick difference and a persistent difference in terms of knowledge and behavior, but that didn't translate into child outcomes. And that is, of course, concerning. But I think one thing that I find especially encouraging and that gives me optimism moving forward is a way that one could imagine scaling these results outside of the context in which we did it. So
yes,
we train these local health workers. And as I alluded to before, it was really important that these are people who had an existing relationship in the community. But one of the things was that we only asked them to deliver this information in roughly three of the communities that they worked in. And they do have these community meetings that we went through. Each of the main organizers was responsible for as many as 20 to 30 communities. And so they have this information now. And you could imagine if you did this more broadly, they could go and act and deliver the information in a much broader set of communities, that by training this one person, you could have a bigger potential impact because of the way that they work with so many people in so many different communities. As well as then, if that were the case and scaled up version of this, you know, we saw that the cash, even though it was there for pretty short period of time, it was only 5 months, that it did seem to have a differential effect in terms of bringing women to the information sessions and then leading to correspondingly greater gains in knowledge and behavior. And so in a more permanent type of program where the cash was there for a longer period of time, it gives me hope that there could be persistent effects that might then trickle down and include persistent impacts in terms of ultimately promoting child development.
Well, yes, it is hopeful, because this has been a very persistent problem, hasn't it, Mike? And it's extremely interesting to hear about how you're delivering this information. We spoke about similar projects a couple of times on Vox Dev Talks in the last couple of months. So thank you very much for talking about it today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was great to speak with you.
The paper is called The Role of Information and Cash Transfers on Early Childhood Development, Evidence from Nepal. And the authors are Michael Navia, Gayatri Acharya and Prashant Bharadwaj. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe, and that means you'll get all of our past episodes. And you can always find those episodes as well at voxdev.org.